Hello, welcome back to the Comp Bio Cafe podcast, where we serve up fresh perspectives in Comp Bio. We're your hosts, Melissa and
Janae.
And today we are going to be talking about healthy work environments.
Before we get started, our latest news for today comes from Melissa. What do you have?
Yeah, so recent paper came out from some Regeneron scientists that basically said that whole genome sequencing didn't give that much more power over whole exome sequencing. I think it was about 3-4% increase in power. And so that's going to have some implications on like what scientists decide to spend their money on, being that whole genome sequencing is much more expensive.
I think that there's a lot happening right now at the latest AGBT meeting. What is it? Ultima Genomics revealed that they have a $100 genome.
Yes, it is Ultima.
Are these similar or competing advancements? Okay, right.
I would have to look into it more.
Okay.
But if, right, like, yeah.
We're in a great place to witness everything that's happening in the sequencing world. We've got long read going on. We've got, you know, this new direction with still like short read or just other types of omic sequencing. I'm happy to be here, happy to be alive at this time.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, like, from the business side of things, how these advancements impact the companies that produce those technologies. Like, if you have a $100 genome, what does that mean for your company? What does that mean for your workforce and those trajectories? I'm, like, more new to, like, looking at things this way, whereas I feel like in tech, that's a very standardized thing to do. You look at a tech company, see their earnings, yeah, see what they're doing, and you're like, oh, I want to invest into them. Or you're like, oh, they're going to be probably hiring more. So let me like look at jobs at this place because they're a growing company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's what I'm definitely learning is becoming important is just like how companies make decisions or how even academic research could be impacted by for-profit companies making certain types of decisions. Up until this point in my PhD, I've thought that it wasn't necessarily something that I needed to pay attention to. But I think as someone generally open and curious about industry in general, and also actually working in a lab that uses some cutting-edge sequencing techniques, I think it's really important to know what's going on and like what's happening in that space. I think maybe that's also part of why, because I've always, my lab, we've always done long read. We've always done like both. We've had the technology at our disposal. So in a way, I kind of feel spoiled, which is why some of the problems I work on now are like, all right, what is the average person actually doing when they're trying to run sequencing experiments, especially if they're trying to look at splicing? So.
Yeah, I think another implication is like as these technologies decrease in price, this kind of research becomes more accessible to more institutions that don't necessarily have the funding capacity as others.
Yesterday, one of my mentoring networking cohort, we were talking with someone who was recently laid off from a large company and the direction that the layoffs are going. Like, are they coming from departments where we are going to need more AI innovation? Or also, like, at the same time, what does it mean for companies like Invitae or 23andMe to be going bankrupt or, you know, losing all of their value? And I think one of the things I'm still curious about that, you know, we weren't really able to put a pin on is like, was the direct-to-consumer model specifically the pain point for some of these companies? Or do we still have promise in the clinical setting where there are so many people? I think if you're also looking at, because I work in a children's hospital, if you're looking at like newborn screening and like other clinical settings that could use on-demand sequencing for patients, mm-hmm. especially for like clinical diagnostics, that is still like, I don't know that it's gotten all of its shine yet, you know, or has seen as many resources there. So I'm hoping that the decrease in price could also move in sort of in that direction, as opposed to, hey, we'll send you this tube to spit in.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot more social factors that goes into the success of a company than just like, is there good science? And like, mm-hmm. is the insight cool? Like the data mm-hmm. breach that happened with 23andMe was kind of like the nail in the coffin that that kind of sent things unraveling. But I do agree with needing those kind of technologies specifically for early genetic testing and genetic screening. But again, the public perception on what that is and what that means is going to, I feel like that's going to be what drives development there. Because if people are going to be like, well, I don't want to get genetic testing, I don't want to know, or, you know, I don't know how to interpret these results. That's going to be a huge barrier for getting the vast majority of the population on board with that kind of science.
I agree. I think we saw the same thing, not even just with like the clinical setting, but like a whole bunch of people from our communities, African-American, across the diaspora, were just like, all right, this is, maybe it's more so for the ancestry and 23andMe aspect of it, of like, well, this isn't going to tell me anything I don't already know. But I think that's when we saw the emergence of maybe some other ethnicity-specific companies and tests come out. If y'all want to learn more about that, I actually recommend listening to the In Those Genes podcast hosted by Janina Jeff. She has several seasons going into this topic of genetic testing in depth, specifically for our communities and specifically for non-scientists to learn about the ins and outs and nuances as they're considering some of these things. So please check out that podcast. It's won awards. Janina is great. She's also a scientist at Illumina. So I definitely recommend learning more through that channel. The main topic for today is how to choose a healthy work environment. Melissa, I think you proposed this. What are you hoping to discuss from this? What's important for you from this area?
Yeah, I think when we're in grad school, it's like how to choose a good lab. And then once you get out of grad school, it's like, how do you choose a good job or know what institution to go to if you want to be a faculty, or how to choose a good postdoc position. But I think all of those kind of come down to the same qualities that you're looking for. Like, are you going to be supported? Are you going to be represented? Do you have advocates? Do you have the resources you need to success in this environment? And so that's kind of what I want to talk about. Like, what are the things that you look for that are indicators of, oh yeah, I can do well here. I could thrive here. I could survive here.
Yeah, I think this became apparent when I was doing rotations and I was thinking of very different lab environments. And now I'm needing to think more about what my ideal work environment looks like, since I'll hopefully be departing from this stage sometime soon. But I think like as an early trainee, I was like, all right, what's the demographic, especially as a computational person? Is it mainly computational people? Am I the only computational person? Which I did rotate in a lab like that. And I quickly realized that at least at the training stage, it was not going to be particularly helpful for me to be the only computational person. I think also different labs have different levels of understanding of what computational mean. If you're coming from a completely experimental, they may just need someone to do stats and analysis and more so the bioinformatics, as opposed to me, someone being in a program where I'm doing more so of the broader computational biology, having a little bit of a broader understanding of computational tools. If I'm going to be the only person that has that extensive knowledge or has or can only challenge myself, or I'm going to have to, you know, think critically about the outside resources or people that can support me, then I'd rather just be somewhere where I can spend a little bit more time already embedded around people mm-hmm. that have the expertise, and they can challenge me in ways that, you know, someone who doesn't have that background does. So I think that is still important to me. It's going to be different, like in industry, or if I do like some sort of research institute where, you know, we have a very focused team and, you know, we're working on tasks that are reliant on a very specific set of my skills. But at the trainee stage, those are some things that I was thinking about. Yeah. How about you?
I don't know if I really thought about it that way. I kind of was really more motivated and interested by data and the type of questions that were asked. And so in terms of having comp bio or bioinformatics support, that wasn't something that was important to me initially. So I did join a lab that was like, I was the only computational person, but mm-hmm. they had previously collaborated with other labs to get their bioinformatics done. So I end up learning from those collaborators. But knowing that I was going to be the only computational person, I was very intentional in setting up my committee to be really computationally heavy people. And people that I know that if I were to email them, they would be like, yeah, let's chat, let's talk about this. And so while my immediate lab around me was really more focused on the biology of things, I had really strong connections with my committee members and other people around me that had the computational expertise that I knew I could go and ask questions and bug them and get support that way.
Yeah, I think the factors that go in, that the commonalities between that are, you know, the balance, right? So if it's not coming from your lab, then what does your support network look like? For me, even though I'm in a computational lab, my committee currently is set up with people on the clinical side, on the like stats and biomedical informatics side, on the cancer side, and the basic biology side. So someone who is a basic RNA biologist. That for me is important because I am challenged in many different directions. But I know, for instance, that, you know, my in-lab mentors, my in-lab mentorship is looking like a very different composition of people who support me on the computational side, whether that's someone, you know, our software person or someone who might have more insight on a particular tool or familiarity with certain types of data sets and things like that. I hope that whatever my next environment looks like, you know, I can continue also not just taking in, but being part of the ecosystem that supports other people. So I'm hoping that my skill sets are complementary to what a team needs. I think that's also a different perspective of what an environment can be, because sometimes it's not just what people can do for you, but what you can do for them. So,
right.
Yeah.
In my environment now, I am surrounded by computational biologists and people who have very like deep technical skills. And so it's been really cool to work in this environment because we will spend a lot of time thinking about our statistical approach, our computational approach, how to optimize it before just going in and playing with the data. And everyone has their own opinion on like what tools are best, what methods are best. So it's nice to have that human aspect of it versus having to go out, read and, you know, try and detect the trends and present that to a lab of non-computational biologists to be like, hey, y'all, what y'all think? And or to my committee members to be like, okay, I've noticed that, you know, these are the standards, these are the tools that are being used and published on, like, this is what my approach is. What do you think? And I think that was really helpful for me to, like, learn those skills on my own so that way I can think critically moving forward. But it's just now in an environment where everyone around me has similar skill sets, I feel like that back and forth or learning what to do next happens a little bit faster.
So how did you get a feel for what some of this, the good parts of your environment might look like as you were, you know, looking for your next opportunity after the PhD?
I really focused on what kind of like scientific output was coming from the places I was looking at. I really wanted to look at like, what kind of papers were they publishing? What kind of science were they doing? And at what level they were doing it at? That kind of gave me insight onto how they work as scientists and how they think. And me knowing that, like, I'm going to learn something here, or I'm going to be supported in exploring XYZ tools here. Another thing that is really important is, like, how much is professional development or growth important? And I've interviewed at companies in which it's like, yeah, I'm doing this one thing over and over again. There's not really like, there's not really a path forward or a path to move up. Or, you know, sometimes, especially at larger companies, you're pigeonholed into like, you have a role. This is your job. This is what we need you to do. And you're not really in a position to think of new questions or drive any of the science forward. And so I wanted to be in a position where I was driving the science forward and not just performing a task over and over again.
And do you feel like that is, that comes from the nature of your current company or the nature of the projects that you're working on?
I think both. Currently, RTI, we have a lot of different kind of scientific projects, some where you're driving the research, some where you're performing a service. And because we want to maintain driving research and science forward, we're always thinking ahead and thinking the next step of, okay, what can we do? Where's the science space moving? Where's the grant space moving? How can we help push that forward?
Nice. Yeah, so some of the main takeaways today are, I guess, think more about what your team looks like, what your team skills look like, what are the projects you're going to be working on. This is true for trainees, for people looking at new jobs, likely early career scientists. How will those projects kind of challenge you in new ways, and how will the people challenge you in new ways? I think as a computational person, we have to sometimes be protective of our time and our skill sets because it's easy for people to misconstrue what we're there for. If you are an analyst, or if you're a bioinformatics scientist, or if you're a computational person, or if you're a stat, like a biostat person, those sometimes have very different implications depending on where you're embedded in the team. So I think topics like this, you know, it's probably, you know, it's obviously not the end of what we'll probably talk about in the future, but I do think it's important to be intentional about your role and to challenge people around you to do the same. Sometimes also, we, like Melissa said, getting pigeonholed into just recycling the same things over and over are not necessarily going to, it's not necessarily going to allow you to grow in the areas that you might want to grow in.
Yeah, and maybe you want to be pigeonholed and do the same thing over and over again. Like, that's totally fine. Just know how to look for those situations.
And I think a lot of that, too, comes in certain types of hiring practices. People just not necessarily being informed of the different formats or different backgrounds that a computational biologist can come from. I think we're still seeing a lot of those muddied waters today in the hiring world. So
yeah, I feel like you reposted something on LinkedIn saying how like big the field is gonna like expand the combine field. So I'm interested to see how that goes. And then we can follow up like next year around this time when you're in a new position and get and see and see how you feel, if your feelings have changed.
Yeah, for sure. All right, everyone. Well, if you have any other comments, questions about this topic of picking a healthy environment as a computational biologist, please email them to podcast@blackwomencompa.org or leave us a voicemail at 302 715-2922. And with that, I'm Janae.
And I'm Melissa.
And we'll see you in the next episode. The Kanbayo Cafe podcast is brought to you by Ijama Miramiku, Melissa Minto, and Janae Adams. Learn more about us at blackwomenkanbayo.org and also tap into ways that you can become a member or a supporter today. Thank you for listening.